Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Welcome to the Second Tier Podcast. I'm Ryan Dilks, and I'm joined by the Jamie Carragher to my Kate Abdo. It's Justin Peach.
Good day to you, Ryan.
Hey up, Justin, lads. Hey up. I hope you're well. Do
Deirdre.
I sound a bit croaky?
Yeah, it's Deirdre from Coro, isn't it? Jesus.
Yeah, I as I mentioned in Sunday's episode, I have been at Cheltenham so far this week, and I've done a lot of shouting. May have had a bit to drink in that time as well, and now it's coming back to bite me on the arse.
Yeah, you've gone full Alan Brazil. You've been Alan Brazil'd. I think would be the best way to describe it. Your balls have finally dropped, which is a good thing. I think listeners will be pleased with that. Well done. Well,
we got there eventually. Yeah. But yeah, it's been an interesting few days so far. I'm only halfway through the week, Justin. It's crazy.
Have you had a good week, though? Has it been an enjoyable one? Has it been a profitable one? I think we should ask.
The first day, no. Today, Tuesday. Tuesday? No, Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Yeah.
At
the time of recording, it's Wednesday.
No idea Wednesday, what day of the week is.
It's been a long day, all right? It's a long week. Wednesday has been a very good day. A very, very good day.
Nice.
All I'm saying is when SBK, our sponsors, signed up to work with us, I'm not sure they read the small print because they didn't expect to be rinsed by Ryan Dilks over the week. So I'm looking forward to that continuing at some point. But you know what? We're not here to talk about Cheltenham, are we, Justin? We're here to talk about Championship football. Welcome to the number one Championship podcast, the Second Tier. Thank you for joining us wherever you are. Yes, we've got a great show lined up for you, ladies and gentlemen, because we had a Championship game, a very random Championship game. Still don't really know why this was played in midweek, but you know what? I'm not going to complain. Birmingham v Middlesbrough, we'll talk about that very shortly. We've also got the ever-going saga, which is the battle between the Premier League and the EFL to try and sort out some sort of financial deal. Don't think it's ever going to get solved, but we'll talk about that very shortly, Justin. Also got a couple of other bits in the news as well, and we'll finish off with another round of listeners, of footballers our listeners have met in strange, strange places. But let's kick things off with that game from Tuesday night, because Middlesbrough have now won three in a row. It's after beating Birmingham 1-0. Not a game flushed with chances. Riley McGree scored a good goal early on, and Middlesbrough just essentially grinded it out from that stage, didn't they? Defended very well. Did you have any pressing thoughts from this game, Justin?
Well, I think it's an impressive performance from them. It wasn't sexy, but it was dominant in a certain way. Didn't concede a shot on target. They had to dig in at times. I think it was just really good midweek performance, away performance against a side who do possess quality. Birmingham City do possess quality. They're just short on confidence. But I think from their perspective, for them to be in the position that they're in now, pushing up the table is fantastic. And as I say, you get more performances like this, that's going to push up the table even further. But Riley McGree, I think, deserves a big shout as well, because he got the winner. I think he's been pretty good since returning from the Asia Cup, which is a big thing. And Rav Vandenberg as well, he deserves a shout out because he defended brilliantly. There's just things clicking at the right time for Middlesbrough, which makes it all the more intriguing as to what's going to happen.
Well, Justin, we can talk about that shortly. But yeah, you're right. It was they ground out the results, and I'm not sure I'd go as far to say they were dominant in this game, but at the same time, Senny Dieng didn't have much to do.
There's ways of dominating a game from my point of view, and I think they dominate it without possession, without pummeling, you know, Birmingham
City. Managed it.
Yeah, it managed it. Managed it dominantly. They were dominant managers of the game.
Still not sure about dominance, but, you know, they managed it well is the point we're making. But it is interesting what you were saying about Middlesbrough, Justin, because remarkably, this three-game winning run means Middlesbrough are now just 5 points off the top six. How's that happened? Not for the first time in the past few weeks, we've looked at our team and said, how are they so close to the playoffs? But you know what? They can't be ruled out, Justin, can they? And I would even suggest they have a more genuine chance of possibly nicking a playoff place than a load of teams who are also in the top half.
It's a really good discussion to have because, as I say, it's all about peaking at the right time. You don't have to play sexy, amazing football at this time in the season. You just got to chip away at results and build those good habits. And this is why I think this game was one of those scenarios where, well, you defend well, you keep the opposition at arm's length. It's a midweek game. You're probably tired from the weekend before. You've got another game at the weekend before the international break. Fixtures are piling up. You've got to manage it. And they managed it. And that's what you've got to do between now and the end of the season, because there's a lot of games to play in a very short space of time, about a six-week period. There's going to be sort of seven or eight games to play. It's going to be difficult. But you put out performances like they did against Birmingham, they'll push up the table because they're going to get clean sheets and they're going to be clinical when they need to be. So, it's just one of those, again, with Borough, where you sort of look at it and go, yeah, like you said, how? They sort of limp the way to a playoff push. It's quite incredible because at various points of the season you had no idea where Middlesbrough are going to finish. They can push up, they can drop low, but hopefully this is a spark of something very nice to talk about for Borough, because we haven't done that very often this season.
Well, the reason for that is because they seem to be edging ever closer to the season's over already bracket, didn't they? And look, they've really struggled for consistency all season, and they had one just 2 from 9 at the start of the year in the league. I mean, 3 wins in a row is obviously a good way to amend that. And it's got to be said, they haven't been incredible in the last 2 games despite winning, but it's not a bad habit to have, is it? With regards to the playoffs, I think they could be a dark horse for the top 6. I mean, you look at the team who started against Birmingham: Paddy McNair, Matt Clark, Lewis O'Brien, Riley McGree, Marcus Force. It's a lot of talent and experience, particularly at this level. So I could go as far as to say some of those lads wouldn't look out of place if they were in the squad of a top 4 side in certain cases. So I think it's entirely plausible that they could have a late crack at the playoffs. They'll have to play a lot better than they have done recently. That's an important point to make. So, you know, there's every chance this form goes nowhere and the season does just fizzle out. But at the same time, I think you could classify them as a dark horse for the top 6, Justin. You know what I mean?
I certainly think they would be a dark horse, but it's about winning that next game, isn't it? Or at least getting a result. And they do have to rely on teams above them dropping points as well, but like I said, it's all about building those good habits and defending resiliently and not dominating, you know, I won't use that word just in case it rubs you up the wrong way, but keeping opposition at arm's bay. And that's what it did. You don't have to be sexy all the time. You can just manage games. And when you've got players like Luke Ayling, as you pointed out, they've got Matt Clark, who's sort of getting back to his best after a really long injury spell. Certainly the Angers looked fairly consistent throughout the season. They've got really solid foundations. They just haven't had a consistent goal scorer. The goals are shared around the team as well, which is helpful, but it's not helpful because you need that clinical player up top. So, as long as Borough keep chipping away at things, and certainly they can push up, but they do have to rely on the likes of Coventry, Hull, Norwich, maybe even West Brom dropping points, which they're hitting good moments as well.
I was fascinated to find out that Middlesbrough will have to keep teams at arm's bay. You know, is that better than arm's length or keeping them at bay, Justin? Which one's better?
So the way I'm describing arm's bay, so an arm's length, obviously your arm's out, it's pushing people back, whereas arm's bay is like you've got your wrists up to your chest and you're like, get back, that sort of thing. Like you're battling them back. You're not pushing them away. You sort of, they're coming at you, you're holding them off with your wrists and your shoulders and you're trying to put your body weight through it. And that's what Middlesbrough are doing right now.
A classic Justin Peach mixed
Absolutely.
Metaphor.
Absolutely. What a moron I am.
But I think what you were saying about, Coventry, Hull, Norwich, etc., dropping points, I mean, that seems entirely plausible in itself because, I mean, Hull have been pretty consistent all season. Coventry and Norwich, not particularly. So, I mean, a five-point gap, it's not a huge ask, is it? So Middlesbrough will have to go on a pretty good run between now and the end of the season for it to be a genuine playoff push, but I could definitely see that happening. Do you think Middlesbrough are a bit of a weird side? Because if you think back to the start of the season, I would say the vast majority of people had them in their top six for the league table predictions, from what I saw anyway. Yet they've been languishing in mid-table now for the past 2 or 3 months. Yeah, and yet there doesn't seem to be anything in the way of calls for Michael Carrick to go. He doesn't seem to be under any pressure at all, Justin. That is a bit weird, isn't it?
It kind of is, but it's that long-term project aspect. And as well, you've got to identify the fact that recruitment's not been particularly great over the past couple of winters. And I think Chris Wilder was victim of that a little bit, and Michael Carrick's also been victim of that a little bit. And it just goes to show that, you know, it's all about the long-term goals. And if you stick by a manager, it can pay off. I think Michael Carrick has largely done a pretty good job this season, because even when they weren't getting results at the start of the season, they were performing better than what their results were paying out. They were creating chances, they weren't putting them away. And that comes down to having a decent goal scorer, which they don't have. If you sell the Championship top goal scorer last season, you don't replace him, you're going to find out. Similarly with Cameron Archer, didn't replace him, they found out. And it's just taken a lot of those new signings from the summer to bed in. Ryan McGree's been injured, he's been at the Asia Cup as well, which I think hasn't helped things. Finnazaz has been settling in since he's moved from in January. So I think there's a lot of components and moving parts of Middlesbrough, which is why they've probably been languishing a little bit. But those moving parts are now moving, and they're moving in the right direction, and that's what they need.
Well, they've got a great chance to make it 4 wins on the bounce, because they've got Blackburn at home this weekend, which is a very winnable game in its own right. Unfortunately for them, they will be without Luke Ayling for that game, because he'll be running in the Gold Cup at Cheltenham on Friday, because as we all know, he is a horse. Let's touch on Birmingham, Justin, because we were talking about Middlesbrough, you know, being a bit surprised about how close they are to the playoff race. Birmingham are at the other end of the table, and it's a bit surprising where they are, isn't it? They're in danger because they've won just 1 point from 5 games, only 1 point above the bottom three. Uncomfortable position they're in, isn't it?
Hugely uncomfortable. Do you think we've been a little bit complacent with Birmingham City? I know you said probably only a couple of episodes ago that there's too much quality for them to go down, but I don't think in this Championship season, where we're looking like a really high point tally to stay up, that there's a team that has too good a place to go down. I just don't think that's the case. Do you think we've been complacent?
Well, put it this way. I don't think it's any coincidence that the form which I just mentioned, 1 point in 5 games, it is 5 games since Tony Mowbray stepped down. Yeah. And I think it's quite clear that they're missing his leadership. Yeah. And put it this way. I'd be quite comfortable in saying that if we had a healthy Tony Mowbray in the dugout, they'd stay up easily. I don't think you can underestimate how much of an impact it's having on them not having him around. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's still helping, apparently. He's giving advice to the caretaker manager, Mark Venus, but you're still missing him as a person when it comes to things like team talks and him being on the training ground, etc., aren't you? So I'm sure Mark Venus is a great coach because he's been with Mowbray for years, but it's a completely different ballgame to management. And I think we're seeing that now. But well, I mean, with regards to have we been a bit complacent with Birmingham, I think it depends on when Mowbray's back and how they respond to his return. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, the angle I would attack it with in terms of complacency is the fact that, you know, with the quality of players that they've got, I think we've just sort of been waiting for them to pick up. And I don't think it's particularly going to be the case because, you know, let's be honest, Wayne Rooney destroyed the confidence of that squad. I think this performance in isolation was actually a good encompassing of that because they were so blunt and almost baseless and sort of decisionless at times that Middlesbrough found it fairly easy throughout the game. And then you go back to the fact that Lukas Djurkovic is still being brought on as a last roll of the dice, last throw of the dice. You know, you shouldn't really be relying on that game by game. And it's not a criticism of Mowbray or Mark Venus. It's just, I think the situation at Birmingham City have found themselves in time and time again over the years. It's been bad decision-making at the top, which has made things suffer on the pitch. And it's left managers like John Eustace, even Lee Bowyer as well, John Eustace, Lee Bowyer, and now Mark Venus and Tony Mowbray to sweep things up. And it's not particularly fair on those managers coming in and doing that. So I think confidence is so low because of how performances have been under Wayne Rooney that we're now sort of, you know, you don't have a leader around to pick them up like Mowbray. You're always going to find it difficult.
But Justin, do you not think that when he comes back, they will pick up?
I can't say for certain it's going to be a magic flip of the switch or flick of the switch, because confidence, I think, is so low at the moment. Like I said, this game's a really good example of that. They were so blunt and almost pointless. Like, they're good players at Birmingham City. They're really good players. I think for one of the chances, it might have even been the goal. Alex Pritchard lost the ball and didn't track back. He's a quality player, Alex Pritchard. And he's got an engine, but you know, there's a lot of things missing at the moment with this Birmingham City team. I don't think it's just about not having Tony Mowbray around. I think there's a lot more to it than that. And I think a lot of damage has been done.
You can't
say that a manager's going to come in and the things are going to immediately pick up. I just don't think you can throw things
out. Yeah,
but we've been complacent about Birmingham already, about the quality of their squad.
But they were doing great under Mowbray before he went.
They were doing okay. They were picking up. They weren't doing great. They were doing okay.
But we are talking about a team who were, fifth in the table at one point. And Mowbray is a very good manager. He's a very safe pair of hands. And I feel like you're almost underestimating that.
No. I'm just not trying to pile pressure on a man who's currently away for health reasons. And he's going to, things aren't going to magically pick up. They might do. But I think there's too much uncertainty to expect that's going to happen, especially if they keep losing between now and him coming back.
But there's at least three worse teams than Birmingham City in this league.
I don't think you can take that at the moment. I just don't think there's so many teams in around that cluster of teams: Stoke, Blackburn, Plymouth, maybe Millwall, QPR. They're all going through spells of form. Birmingham aren't. They can't pick up wins at the moment, and like you said, they don't have a leader around. So I don't think I would buy into the notion of there are three worse teams than Birmingham, because like I said, with this high point tally we're expecting with teams going down, I don't think there are teams that are worse than each other down there at the moment. I just don't think that's the case.
I'm not sure. Not sure about that. I mean, it is worth obviously mentioning that obviously Tony Mowbray's health is the most important thing here. And I'm not sure when he is back. They said 6 to 8 weeks. That was 4 weeks ago. So he may be back after the international break. I don't know. But, while his health is the most important thing here, they desperately need him back sooner rather than later. And I think if that does happen, I personally think we will see an upturn of some form. But you've got to admit right now it is looking quite concerning based on their recent form. Justin, let's take a quick break. After that, we'll talk about some of the news from the past few days, including that bloody funding deal with the Premier League and the EFL, which just never seems to be getting any closer.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to the Second Tier podcast. Let's talk about some of the news from the past few days then, Justin. And there continues to be a stalemate between the Premier League and the EFL over a new funding deal. There was a meeting on Monday to try and agree one, but it wasn't successful. The overall sum, which would be partly tied to future TV revenues, is expected to be around £900 million over 6 years. But the Premier League has been accused by the government of parking the bus when it comes to the progress of the deal. And Justin, this feels like it's been going on forever now, but we don't seem to be getting any nearer. And the Premier League promised to produce a deal which would safeguard the EFL and generally the future of English football, but it seems to me that it's quite obviously not that bothered.
Completely spot on. it frustrates the hell out of me that this is the case. It really, really does. And I mean, as a spokesperson for the championship, this is a disgrace, an absolute disgrace. I did some maths, so bear with me. And I apologise if these calculations are incorrect. But you mentioned the deal's £900 million over 6 years. That's £7.5 million per club per season. That's it. That's it. That's all it will cost a club per season. Yes, it's a chunk of money that they won't have, but I think Premier League clubs would be more richly rewarded if this was the case, because more money going into the EFL means better quality of players, better quality of football, and more money that they're going to spend on players going into their own clubs and buying them. I think this is a really, really important thing, and the fact that the Premier League clubs are digging their heels into it. You know, the government mentioned this 2 years ago, and this vote still hasn't happened. Why are they kicking their can down the road? It's a joke. It's just a group of rich, entitled plebs who can't create a sustainable and profitable business model, and they solely have to rely on TV funding to bail themselves out. This is what it is. They can't bear for other sustainable football clubs to come in and shake things up. They just cannot bear it. What pisses me off even more, and I'm really sorry, it's a bit more of a rant now, is Nottingham Forest are one of the teams that are turning their noses up at it.
Ugh.
Nottingham Forest, a team who have spent their time in League One in this century, turning their nose up at it. It's just a joke.
A lot of time in the Championship as well.
So much time.
As well, isn't it? I enjoyed the very subtle use of the word plebs, which I don't think we've used at any point on this podcast, but I'm all for it being used a lot more often. But yeah, you're spot on, Justin. There are reports that the so-called Big Six are the ones who are being awkward here, which isn't a surprise at all, because the ones who need the money the least are demanding they get more money. It's just shameless greed, isn't it? But look, we know they don't care about anyone else but themselves because of the whole Super League saga, but it seems inevitable to me that this won't get resolved. So it's a good thing we've got the independent regulator coming in, because that will hopefully they'll just impose a new deal, whatever happens. And what may end up happening, I don't know the intricacies of the deal, but the Premier League are probably actually hurting themselves here, because I imagine the regulator will put in place something which is less beneficial than the offer on the table right now, but we'll see. This needs to come in though, doesn't it? Because,
yeah.
Well, first of all, it will hopefully create a more level playing field and obviously safeguard the future of clubs as well. We could do with it coming in sooner rather than later. So hopefully the regulator thing is sorted out soon, because as I say, I can't see this deal being agreed in its current state, if you see what I mean.
No, spot on. I think I want to make the point as well, and I alluded to it with Nottingham Forest being in League One. There are several clubs who have spent time in League One this century. The likes of Brentford, Man City. Mm. Not bad.
Is that this
Boris,
century?
Yeah, to the 99-2000, technically.
Oh,
it is.
Just teaching, yeah.
Man City, Nottingham Forest, Bournemouth, Wolves, Luton, Sheffield United, Brighton, they've all been in the Championship. And I'm not saying those clubs are voting against it, but it just goes to show the importance of the EFL pyramid and how teams can rise up and add to the competitive nature that is the Premier League. The competitive nature that is the sellable asset that is the Premier League to overseas money, which is what brings all of this cash in. They just don't understand it. They never will, because all they want to do is create power for themselves and line their pockets with as much cash as possible, because they can't. As I said, the plebs cannot create a sustainable business model.
And ultimately, the thing is as well, this is about, you know, trying to bridge the divide between the Premier League and Championship. I mean, it's been a big talking point this season because of how poor the three promoted teams have done in the Premier League this season. And we could debate this forever, whether there's a gap that's growing or not. But there's obviously concern there. And this will hopefully go some way to actually stopping that, bridging that gap and making it so it's not just a closed shop in the Premier League, where we just have the same 23 teams rotating between themselves each season, because that will just be shit, won't it?
Yeah.
So hopefully this goes some way to sorting that, and it gets brought in sooner rather than later, so we can have this levelling out of the playing field. Let's move on, Justin. Sheffield Wednesday are being investigated by the FA after missiles were thrown from the stands during their game against Leeds last Friday. The club say they're extremely disappointed and could face sanctions because it's not the first time it's happened this season. Justin, I'm bringing this up. I'm bringing this to the table because of this. I saw this tweet by Sheffield Wednesday journalist Joe Cran at the Sheffield Star doesn't paint Wednesday fans in a good light. He said, "I know it's a minority, but this season Wednesday fans have been involved in the mocking the death of a child, racism against a player, and throwing things onto the pitch on numerous occasions. Just stop it." That was the tweet, but he also didn't mention booing that player who was racially abused by a fan. It's just really poor, isn't it? And look, I know it's a minority, but I can't recall a fan base at this level who have had so many high-profile incidents with fans in a single season. Yeah. You know what I mean? They have to do better, don't they? And again, I'm not saying it's all Wednesday fans. I know it's just purely a few idiots, but it's embarrassing for the club, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, there needs to be some leadership from the top as well, sort of calling their own fans out. I don't know how often the supporters board can get involved as well.
They have done that, to be fair. Wednesday, when they put out this statement about the missiles, they did say this needs to stop. And it's called for other fans to call it out, essentially, and report it so they can stop these twats from being twats. But I see what you mean.
Well, the solution there is to identify them and ban them and give them banning orders from the ground. I mean, there are enough cameras at football grounds now. It's a lot of the systems that run and security systems that run are state of the art. So there's no excuse not to ban them, because you can't take flares. You can't even take bottles into grounds at the moment with bottle caps on, which is very difficult because they're now recyclable and now they're attached. That's less of that, the better. It's very annoying. But you can't even take bottles into the ground. So, you know, these things that continue to happen, you know, there needs to be harsher sanctions from their own football clubs to rid their football club of, I wouldn't say hooligans, I think that's not quite the word that you need to use, but these disruptors that are, you know, dragging the name of the club. Plebs. These plebs that are dragging the name of the football club through the mud. They don't need it. They don't need it. The owner's done a good enough job of that as it is. You know, be a light for your football club. Do not be a dick.
Yeah. And I just really wanted to bring that up because I think it's, I mean, on the pitch for Wednesday, it's strangely turning out to be a season which may actually go down as quite a positive one. But a certain section of the Wednesday fan base have really let the club down in some ways this season. And that's a shame. So hopefully this is it. They can knock it on the head and just get rid of these twats, basically. And the final bit of news, Justin, is about Sunderland, because they've had someone apply to be their new manager already. Of course, they currently have Mike Dodds as their interim boss, but the person who's applied is none other than Dwight York. He's confirmed in an interview he's gone for the job. What do you think, Justin?
He applies for every job and then he moans when he doesn't get it. And I think some of it is just the way he approaches these things is quite difficult to understand. He's not got any coaching experience, Dwight York.
Actually, he does. He does. You're doing Dwight York a disservice here. He was the assistant manager of the Trinidad and Tobago national team. And then he became the manager of Australian side MacArthur. And from what I've read, very little, but it seems like he did a pretty good job because he won a cup with them. So you're doing Dwight York a disservice, Justin Peach.
I apologise profusely for Dwight York. I just think he applies for every job possible and he doesn't get them. And there's clearly a footballing reason why that's not the case. He doesn't get these jobs. I don't think he's qualified for it, to be honest with you. So, but fair play, he's putting it out there. He doesn't need to publicise it. I don't know why he did, but he did.
He wants the fans to rally around him, probably. I'm guessing that's maybe why he's done it. But, I mean, looking at how Sunderland are doing at the moment, could they do much worse? I don't know. I don't think Dwight York is the answer for Sunderland, is he? But based off, you know, them appointing Mick Beale, I don't think you can rule out anything with Sunderland at the moment. Justin, let's finish off with a bit of correspondence from our listeners. We'll start off with Streets Won't Forget Footballers. We put out the question, when was it, 2 or 3 weeks ago, for listeners to get in touch with their club's most Streets Won't Forget Footballers. And you know what? We have had another great round from our listeners right here. This is from Alex Tuggle, Justin. You'll appreciate this. He says, for Plymouth, it's got to be Akos Bazaki.
Oh, my God.
What a legend, Justin. Oh, Coca-Cola Championship GOAT.
Yeah, that Plymouth kit with the collar and the ginsters. Oh. Really, really dark shade of green. That was gorgeous. What a wonderful, wonderful set of years that was. Yeah, Akos Bazaki, that was Peter Halmosi, Paul Watton, Romain Larryu. Oh my God, that team.
Justin,
Lee Hodges, that team. Oh my
stop
God,
it.
I need to step away.
Excited.
I need to step away. Yeah, that's a cracking one. Love that. Love it.
Yeah, Bazaki is proper Championship Streets Won't Forget footballer. He is not just for Plymouth or QPR for that matter. He is just general Championship as a whole. Streets Won't Forget footballer, top five, isn't he? Because he was just class, absolutely class. This is from Stephen Whitfield. He's a Preston fan. And his suggestion is Sean Gregan. He says he was a colossus for them in the, was it noughties? I think noughties,
it was.
90s?
Yeah,
it was around that time, wasn't it? It was a bit before my time, really, Justin.
No, I think it might have been the Baxi kit I could picture him in. But sure, no, it might have been later, actually. Sean Gregan, he doesn't look like a footballer, is what I can describe him as. He doesn't look like a footballer. He looks like a building contractor. That's the only way. And he's got the name of a plumber. And he used to be he was a midfielder, and I don't think he qualifies as a Streets Won't Forget kind of footballer, but I appreciate this shout because that has drawn my mind back to him uncomfortably, I think.
Uncomfortably, Jesus. And this final one is from Gavin Lowe. He says, for Hull, Eldin Jakupovic. He was our backup goalkeeper for years and then turned into prime Neuer season.
He did. And he went to be third choice at Leicester after they got relegated. Oh, when you said the name, I was like, Jakupovic. And I was, he did turn into prime Neuer. That is an incredible thing. He did. He was an outstanding stopper for a season. Wow! Yeah, that is a goalkeeper as well. That deserves it. That is not Sean Gregan. Sorry, but Eldin Jakupovic, brilliant.
Very good, very good selection there. Did he get to the FA Cup final with Hull? Was he in goal for that?
Oh, that's worth a Google. Mm. That's worth a Google.
I do remember him having that one season where he was absolutely unbelievable and then did nothing else with his career. But you know, good to hear him mentioned. Justin, it's now time for us to do football as our listeners have met in strange places. This is another question which we put out to the listeners quite a while ago now, and it's still, you know, going full steam ahead with this momentum. Listeners have been getting in touch in their droves. This, of course, comes after my anecdote of meeting Jamie Vardy outside of a train toilet. This is from Josh Hamlington. He says, I met Mateo Kovacic in Chester Zoo gift shop a few months ago. Got a picture and left him to it. I mean, I like the location, Mateo Kovacic, not Championship though. And we much prefer the obscure ones like Giles Coke, don't we?
Yeah. It's quite a good one. If we were a Premier League podcast, so get in the bin.
Well, Chester Zoo gift shop is good. Don't tell Josh to get in the bin.
Sorry, Josh.
He's gone out of his way to get in touch.
Go out and meet a player who played for Stockport, then come back to us.
Okay.
Sorry, Josh.
This is from Andrew Jones. He says, back in 1997, I was on holiday in Florida with my girlfriend and her family. We were out doing some shopping and bumped into Ian Wright in World of Denim. He was there changing a pair of jeans he had bought, and he signed my till receipt, much to the bemusement of the shop staff. Keep up the great show. You know what, Ian Wright, you know, he's more Premier League than Championship as well, but just for the obscurity of the location and what he was doing,
yeah,
I'll allow it.
And topping jeans. So he's clearly bought those jeans while he's out in Florida, not been happy with them and taking them back. Ian Wright, why is he not trying them on in the shop?
Yeah, that's a bloody good point, Justin.
Yeah.
Very good point. Well, Ian Wright was still playing in 1997, wasn't he?
He was still
been at Arsenal.
He was either still at Arsenal or he'd just gone to West Ham. I can't quite remember which.
Why was he in Florida?
He's on holiday, obviously. He can holiday.
Still, I don't know. You had a random meeting with a footballer the other day, didn't you?
The other day, yes, I did. It was the most random meeting possible. So I'm selling my house at the moment, and I had a surveyor come round. And that surveyor turned out to be an ex-pro. So I then asked who he played for, and he was like, oh, I played for Sheffield United under Neil Warnock. I played for Scunthorpe and Mansfield. He had a very good EFL career after I researched. But the player turned out to be none other than Kevin Hurst. Now, there'll be a lot of people who will say who, but if you Google him, it might ring a bell because he played for Chesterfield, he played for Mansfield, he played for Scunthorpe, played for Scunthorpe in the Championship when they came up under Nigel Adkins. He had a very good EFL career, but he came around and surveyed my house. He was checking that it was still standing and there was no damp. There is damp, he told me, so that's an issue. But we won't tell the buyers that if they don't listen. But he came through the academy with Billy Sharp. Which was interesting. He played alongside Britta Sombalonga at Southend as well, which I thought was intriguing.
How old is he?
He's 38. Great set of teeth.
Fucking old Billy Sharp's old, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. He is old. But yeah, Kevin Hurst, great set of teeth. Great set of teeth, I can tell you that.
Wow. I mean, I love it. That's great. How many appearances did he make for Scunthorpe then in the Championship?
I don't know. I didn't go that far into my research, but I know he played a good handful of games for them at the very least.
Yeah. Very obscure, but
yeah, it is
just
obscure.
Purely for the randomness of the actual situation. Yeah. That's a great one. Obviously, as I mentioned at the top of the show, been at Cheltenham Races this week. And as we were walking to the race course, we walked past the whole of the Bristol Rovers squad. I don't know how much people know about Bristol Rovers, but they've basically got an ex-Championship 11 in their whole squad. So we saw Chris
Taylor.
Martin. Who's that, sorry?
Matt Taylor as well, the manager.
We didn't see Matt Taylor, but we saw Chris Martin, Jack Hunt. I saw Jordan Rossiter as well. I don't think he played in the Championship, but I recognised him. I didn't recognise any of the other players, but I was just going through the squad and was like, this is just full of Championship players from years gone by, isn't it?
Yeah, Glenn Whelan was there at one point as well over the last couple of years under Joey Bard, which is an interesting one.
I don't want to talk about him, Justin. I knew he would probably come up at some point when I bring up Bristol Rovers, but yeah, just horrible little man. There we go, ladies and gentlemen. This has been Random Footballers. Our listeners are met in strange places. If you want to get in touch with that or a Streets Won't Forget player, please email us secondtierpod@gmail.com and we will almost certainly give you a shout out on the show in the near future. But this has been the Second Tier Podcast and we'll be back again tomorrow with our preview show sponsored by SBK to look ahead to the Championship this weekend and make some bloody predictions. So we look forward to seeing you then. But until then, this has been the Second Tier Podcast. I've been Ryan Dilks.
I've been Justin Peach.
And a big thank you for listening.
Second Tier is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.